everybody. Welcome to the Hunter's Quest podcast. This is your host, Hunter McWaters. Great to be with you. Today, I have an awesome conversation with a really cool guest. Glad to be back in the swing of things, talking to people who are way cooler than me. This week's guest is a guy named Trevor Thompson. He is an ex-Navy SEAL or former SEAL, combat veteran, base jumper, assistant guide in Alaska, bow hunter, all around really cool dude. He's also a photographer and artist. Really cool guy, the kind of guy I really like having conversations with. You know, a badass, but still with a creative side and just a thirst for life. So had a great conversation with Trevor. We connected. We talked about his time in the service, his background, his hunting, even got into like talking about stuff on the border and just kind of a free-flowing conversation, but a really good one. Great dude to talk to. Glad we got to link up. So hope you guys enjoy this week's episode. I want to remind you guys one more time. I got some really cool new films from my hunt in Spain with Pedro Empuero right now, just live on my YouTube channel. And still got a giveaway going. If you go over there and comment on those films, you're going to enter to win a brand new set of Canis Athlete Alps Down puffies. That's a top and a bottom. Super awesome puffies that I wore all year. Great balance of lightweight, durable, and very warm. So go over there, check out those films, leave a comment, and subscribe. You get entered to win. And also, I have a really exciting Audad hunt I'm about to release in the next couple of weeks. So be on the lookout for that. Really, really cool hunt. And I'm going to be going back down there to hunt Audad in January. So looking forward to that. So I appreciate y'all's support. Please, you know, share the show with friends and family. I know that I haven't been releasing as many episodes lately in the last few weeks, but I have 180-some episodes to go back through and some really killer guests and really good conversations, even back into the really early episodes. So check them out. Share the show with friends. You know, leave me a review on Apple Podcasts if you can. I haven't asked for that in a while, but that would be helpful. Trying to get the podcast back up to where it has been in the past. And as always, please go to YouTube and subscribe to my YouTube channel. That's a huge help if you can do that, and it costs you nothing. Also, you can, of course, follow along at The Hunter's Quest on Instagram. Really cool stuff there. And I want to say thanks to all my partners. So enjoy this week's podcast with Trevor Thompson, and we'll see you guys on the next one. All right, everybody, welcome to the show. This is your host, Hunter McWaters. It's great to be with you. And today I am pleased to be joined by my guest, Mr. Trevor Thompson. How you doing, man?
I'm doing really well. It's not too early in the morning. My last engagement was about 7 a.m., so this is a little bit nicer.
Okay, so you've been on the podcast circuit, I guess, huh?
Yeah, you know, and it's funny how it'll end up doing this, like, up and down cycle, and sometimes you're on a few in a row, and sometimes you're on nothing, and I know it can be a bit of a revolving door of podcast guests for some people, so we haven't talked before, so hopefully we can get through some stuff that interests some people and maybe some things that they get a laugh out of, and we'll see how it goes.
For sure, man. Yeah, you've been on some really big podcasts, and I got a email from a PR person that works with you guys about you, and like I get those from time to time, and usually it's like so like cheesy and just weird. I'm like, what? And then like actually I looked at it and I was like, oh, this guy looks really cool.
Awesome.
So I'm glad it worked out. But so yeah, man, like I was staying off air, you know, I kind of sort of intentionally didn't dive too deep into you just because like I wanted to like kind of find out like on the fly. I know a little bit about you, but where I guess I want to hear like, you know, kind of your whole story, but just start off with like where are you from?
So originally I am from Los Angeles. Okay. Born and raised there. Both my parents are from LA. Both sets of grandparents had moved out there in the kind of in the mid 40s.
Yeah.
So
And you have
we're
an interesting
pretty.
family history. I listened to a little bit on Jack Carr's podcast.
Oh, yeah. So if you want me to back up to there, so the family's had somebody on the continent since 1640. So
Wow.
our first person that came over, as far as we know, was an illegal immigrant. They stowed away in like an apple crate or something and then revealed themselves. And I don't think you're going to toss somebody overboard. So yeah, they ended up across the Atlantic and on the eastern seaboard. And we fought in almost every conflict. So French and Indian Revolutionary War, both sides of the Civil War, Spanish American, World War I, World War II, Korea,
Wow.
Vietnam, and now I was in the GWAT. So it's been kind of an interesting history. And we've been west of the Rockies since, God, right after the Civil War. It's been kind of a wild family dynamic to learn about.
How did you learn about all that stuff?
So my dad's mother, she was curious about the family history and started researching both sides of it. And we are super fortunate where we have a really good repository of all the information. We have most of the names going back all the way to Wales, Scotland,
Wow.
Ireland, and Denmark. And in Denmark, we can trace our blood lineage back to, I think, just like the middle 900s, which is
Wow.
wild. But it's pretty much due to her, and it became her hobby when she didn't have kids in the house. So she
That's
raised
awesome.
four kids, and that just became her thing. And man, really thanks to her for doing that, because now we know a lot of wildly weird and interesting history.
Yeah.
I mean, shit, like I grew up, we have a framed picture in my parents' house, and I saw it last year when I was there for Christmas. And if you know what indentured servitude is, it's like it was nearly a form of voluntary slavery, right? So you got brought over and then you were stuck working at whatever household or farm for 7 to 10 years. We have one from like 1740 that's framed up in the house for a
Wow.
relative of ours. Yeah. It's like signed by King George, whatever it was, the third or whatever was who was in charge at that point.
That's crazy. And like, that's the
Yeah.
thing. Like, America, most of us, if not all of us, but I mean, we all, unless you're, like indigenous Native American or something, we all come from people who, like, either they got here and against their will, unfortunately, or like they, kind of took a huge risk. I mean, crossing the ocean back in the day, it's not like, jumping on a flight.
Had
And
to be eternally optimistic.
yeah, and like I always wonder, like, that has to have had some kind of impact on who we are as people and just like how we fit into the world. Just like, all of our ancestors were just crazy.
I've actually heard and read a sociologist that was talking about this that was trying to explain why Americans are exceptionally optimistic people and why they constantly think they can do the thing. And he said that there's like a genetic theory that they think that because if you got on a boat and crossed the Atlantic, you thought you were going to make it. And then if those people then continued going west and thought they were going to make it, and then they
Yeah.
continued going west and thought they were going to make it, man, you're just breeding in a whole bunch of really optimistic human beings that are like, man, I sure shit, I can do that.
Yeah.
Well, most of them didn't, but the ones
And the
that
ones that didn't
survived,
got weeded out of the gene pool.
exactly. So it's interesting to see what ends up coming from that and the types of personalities, the go-getters, the entrepreneurs, the startup people, and a lot of them are coming from the Western US and families that have been around a couple hundred years, and there's a reason behind that.
For sure. Yeah. And I mean, just in my own entrepreneurial journey, like, starting 4 years ago, started a podcast and then starting kind of to do YouTube films. I have a background in TV production, but, and then starting a TV show, like, a lot of people were like, you're stupid. This is never going to work. Like, how are you going to make a living? And I think you have an art background, so you're used to hearing all that stuff too.
Oh, yeah.
But like, there's just got to be this part of you that's like, no, like, screw it. Like, yeah, everyone else failed, but I'm gonna do it. like for me, it's like a faith. There's a faith aspect to it. You know, I believe I'm doing what God made me to do. And, but yeah, there's also just that aspect of like, you have to just like kind of be crazy and believe you can do it, even though lots of people that are smart are telling you, I don't know if you can do this.
Yeah. And, they're not the one in the driver's seat, right?
Yeah, for sure, man. So yeah, tell me a little bit about, you know, your early part of your life and, what kind of led you into, I guess what would be like the first big chapter of your life, which would be probably your military service.
So, I come from a family that encouraged us to play musical instruments, to learn, to be curious. My dad's an attorney. He's also an artist. He does bronze sculptures, used to do bronze sculptures. My mom studied art at Arizona, but they were also both athletes. She swam there, and my dad was a baseball and football player, not at Arizona. But
nice.
They encouraged all three of us. So I have two younger brothers to play sports, play a musical instrument, and do some sort of art.
What instrument do you play?
So I used to. I used to play trumpet and flugelhorn and a little bit of piano.
Okay.
Poorly. My middle brother ended up actually going to University of North Texas, which is an exceptional music school, and he's getting his master's now in music education. So
wow,
he's a
cool,
very good musician. My youngest brother is 30 and has a PhD and does the more corporate side of living, but he was a starting goalie at UC Irvine and Denver University. So
nice.
All of us did things. I was a track and field guy. I was good at it. I wasn't fantastic. But
how old are you, if you mind ask?
I'll be 37 in January, so like in 3 weeks.
Wow, okay. That's the same age as me.
Yeah.
Cool.
So came from track and field. I loved art. I had kind of a bifurcation. I was like, I didn't know if I wanted to be an artist or musician, and my senior year of high school, I just made the choice to go art instead of music. A lot of my friends ended up becoming musicians, and I ended up going the art route. Still didn't finish that. I was in school for about, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 weeks before I was like, man, I'm not sure this is going to be for me. And then within 2 months, I had put in a leave of absence, said I was going to finish the year, and had gone and talked to a recruiter. And after I spoke to the recruiter, I told my parents. So they were super stoked. But I said I was going to finish the year, but
was there something that like what was it that made you, that would seem from the outside as a pretty drastic like shift in like, you know, trajectory. Was there a moment or a thing or what was it?
Yeah, the moment was just that it was the middle of 2006 and you and I are the same age. So we were in high school when we watched Baghdad get bombed. We were almost about to go to high school when we watched the towers come down. So we're well within the sphere of old enough to really remember these things as distinct life moments for us, right? And coming from a family that had military service in every generation, I felt like I wasn't doing what I might have owed the country myself, and being in a position where, man, how weird would it be if you had that thought and then 30 years later, you're like sitting there on a couch, you know, with whatever job you have, and you're like, man, I chose not to do it, and I was fully capable. Mm. And that's me talking to me, not anybody else. Everybody's situation is different, right? Because I have friends that are the same age and could have served and didn't, but they had other stuff going on. You know, they either had families or they were on career paths or whatever the case may be. But for me, I was going to an art school.
Yeah.
I wanted to do museum restoration, and I'm like, this isn't going to be that thing that if I don't take the chance, if I don't make that leap, I'll probably regret it. And I'm glad I did. I'm also glad I trained my ass off for it because I had no damn clue what I was getting into. And I talked to a guy yesterday, and I was saying, man, I wasn't like one of those guys like Andy Stump or I think Terry Hewen too. Like there's a number of guys. I'm trying to bring up names that people might know
Yeah.
that wanted to be a Navy SEAL since they were a child. Jack Carr is another example. Like he wanted to be since he was a kid, right? You know, they always wanted to do that thing. Why didn't like at all? I came up with that maybe weeks before I went to talk to the recruiter. I was like, all right, well, I'm not an idiot. I'm relatively athletic. Like, let's do something really hard. What's the quickest way into combat that I could think of? I did very little research. I'm like, I'll be a Navy SEAL. Like, looking back, that was an incredibly insane decision. But
It's probably good you maybe it's good you didn't know much.
I'm really glad I didn't know. Like, and there were no books. There was nothing. I mean, I don't think Lone Survivor came out until the book itself. Like, I don't think Marcus's book came out until like maybe 2007. You know, so the information about special operations was there was a few books like The Finishing School, and then there's old Vietnam era books. There was really not a lot out there for guys to be super interested in. You know, guys now, and I've met newer guys now, and a lot of them have a lot of exposure. And so I didn't have basically any exposure. So kind of jumped into the pool without knowing what temperature it was.
All right. So let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so like I said before, man, I am sure happy that I put the amount of time on my legs and in the pool that I did. I basically made becoming fit in that capacity like a bud student my only job, because I went into it thinking I will have no other options. They will have to kill me to get me out or break me physically. That's another ridiculous choice, which I'm glad I made, because then I never thought about quitting. You know, you hear it sometimes where guys say, oh, everybody thinks about quitting, and that's bullshit. There's a lot of guys that don't ever consider quitting. Most of them end up being like kind of in the upper half physically of the class. So they don't end up getting hurt. They don't end up in the back getting beat on a regular basis. You know, they're not getting these personally self-deprecating moments to then fall back into, oh, maybe I don't belong here. This is something that did I make a bad choice? Maybe I should quit. That is an option. It's just a
That's how it
reality that
starts,
it,
right? It's
yeah,
that
like
little tiny,
that
maybe I should
creeper.
quit. Yeah. And then it just.
It's the hot spot in your boot, you know, like walking up a hill, an hour in, you know, you got 7 more hours, and you're like, should I? Maybe I should turn around, you know,
But if it's not an
but
option from the beginning, it's not an option.
precisely, you know, and so for a lot of us, it's just not an option, and I very luckily ended up for the swims. I was in the top two pairs of the class the whole time. For the runs, I was always in the top four or five people. I was kind of at the near-ish top of the class for everything except for, say, some of the strength mo movements, 'cause I'm not a big guy. Like, I'm 165 pounds now. And the obstacle course, I was like probably right in the middle time-wise for the class. And man, there are some incredible athletes that go through that program. There's
No,
some
I bet.
incredible athletes that quit, and there's also some incredible guys that are not athletes that you'd be like, there's no way that guy's making it. And they are some of the hardest sons of bitches you'll ever meet, and you ain't gonna get them to quit. As long as they don't fail, they ain't going nowhere.
Man, that's incredible. Yeah, I mean, I don't even necessarily know why I'm bringing this up, but it's something I've been kind of wrestling with lately because I just met a new friend the other day who was a combat veteran, Marine Corps, and my age, and like I and we're the same age, and we were talking about this stuff like. I just my story, man. I always wanted to be in the military too. And I also was a musician, but I like went like way down that path and got into drugs and alcohol and all that stuff. And so when I was the age where I could have done that, my life was a complete mess. And I mean, I was a druggie. So that's To be honest with you, man, like, and now that coming out of that, and I'm like, now I'm a father, I'm, I do all these hunting excursions, and I'm in like the best shape of my life. Actually, it feels like I haven't aged in 10 years because I was like super unhealthy in my mid 20s, and I'm like super like fit now, and so it's like the reverse
Yeah,
aging
you're
or
taking the
something.
reverse arc of most people.
Yeah, or just like, yeah, so but I still struggle with that, man, like, because yeah, it's just like, it's not, and it's weird because I don't want to be like, oh, I regret that I didn't go to war, because that's like a weird thing to think or
Yeah.
say, but I do kind of regret being like kind of a piece of garbage when I could have been doing something important in my life. But I don't know, I guess that's just,
But
the way my life went.
that's a valid thing to think, without having that sort of ability to look back in retrospective, you're really not allowing yourself to have the most full and complete picture of the person you can be and are. And I think without looking back and being honest with yourself, that's very difficult, to then move forward in a capacity that you can be the best version of whomever you are, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, there should be maybe a tinge of I could have been a better person, but not doing something that you didn't even give yourself the chance to try and do seems crazy when I hear people talk about it, because
Yeah.
I've heard people, oh yeah, I should have done, like, did you even have the opportunity to do it? Like, well, no. And like, then don't worry about it, man.
Yeah.
Just like you said, like regretting not going to war, that's not even in the wheelhouse, because like you said, like you were, living the Motley Crue life. Like that's a different
Yeah.
version of reality,
Yeah.
which is okay. And it's also okay to look back and be like, man, I could have fixed that. Like,
Yeah.
probably would have made some shit easier now, but maybe you
Who
wouldn't.
knows?
Maybe you never know. Like I know guys that joined and didn't make it through the program because of injury, and now they're probably a little crippled. So just accept where you are now and keep trying to be better, right?
Exactly. That's all you can do is just, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now. So,
Yep.
while I'm not, probably running off to basic anytime soon, 37 with three kids, but yeah, like I said, just be the best version of who I can now, and trust that, God has a plan for my life, just like he had a plan for yours. They're just different plans.
Yeah. I mean, it looks like from the wall behind you that that plan included some animals, so you
Yes,
did
it
some
did.
work.
That's the like the one way I can justify to myself. I'm like, okay, I still get to do like kind of cool military-esque stuff, except for like I don't have people shooting back at me. It's not scary, it's fun. I can go when I want, not when they tell me to. Like, you know what
Have you tried lion
I
hunting?
mean? Like not yet, it's on the list. No, not really, but yeah, I mean, I do think kind of what I do is a reflection of that desire for whatever it is that makes people desire to do military service, or I don't know, whether it's, I guess it's just like the man inside of us that is like wants to go like either protect or provide or something, and so like I said, my path didn't take me to the protect necessarily side of things, but it's played out in different ways, and so I have, I won't say I don't have any regrets because I do think I squandered some years of my life through some bad decisions, but I'm making the best of it now.
Hell yeah.
So, well, anyway, what I guess, obviously there's lots of bad stuff that potentially can happen in combat and war, but what was some of your favorite things about, and I don't even mean like necessarily like it could be like individual things that happened, but what was some of your favorite things about your time in the service?
Man, I met, hung out with, befriended, and lost a few people that are some of the hardest working, most talented human beings that I never would have met. We had guys from everywhere, from ranches in Colorado, like a buddy of mine who's still in. I mean, the guy was a calf roper. He went to like University of Wyoming, Cody, you know. Another guy was like from the backwoods of Alabama, and you could hardly understand him. And now he is farming. A guy I went to buds with, who actually he has a relatively well-known social media account, Frozen Trident,
Oh,
Jeff
cool.
Reed. He is from Pennsylvania, and now he lives in Fairbanks and races dogs.
Oh, nice.
There's no way I would have met any of those guys,
Yeah.
you know, and they were all there for the exact same purpose, the exact same job. That's something that I will take with me to the grave. That just incredible, you know. And then there's the standard. There's nothing really cooler than riding in a helicopter to a target on night vision. Like, that's wild.
Yeah.
Stepping on the ramp of a, you know, a C-17, and it's 4:30 in the morning, and you can see the sunrise, and you're at 27,000 feet. Like, that's insane.
Yeah.
Being on the back of a nuclear submarine underwater, like, I mean, there's things that you're allowed to do, and in retrospect, you're looking back, and you're like, they let a 23-year-old do that? Like,
Yeah.
man, were they that hard up, or were we that good, or is it just like a real weird
Yeah.
confluence of those two things? Because it kind of is. It definitely led to some of the scariest as well as some of the best moments of my 20s, because I basically spent my entire 20s in the military,
Yeah.
like from when I was 19 to 28.
Wow, okay. Yeah, there. You guys are a special group of people. So I grew up in Virginia Beach.
Oh,
So
okay.
yeah, like I had like one of my like there was a youth group leader who like I was like in love, not in love. You know what I mean? Like I really looked up to this guy. He was
Idolize,
a
yeah.
yeah, he was a young SEAL, Bill Rapier. I don't know, do you know him at all?
Oh, yeah.
MTAC shooting. Yeah, he was a youth group leader at my church. I ended up taking him hunting a couple times or one time. That was a fun story. And then just had some friends. Like my first hunting partner out west ever was a SWCC. Really cool guy. So anyway, just and I've had friends over the years. So definitely a special group of people. And you'd mentioned some of the scariest moments. Is there like any that stand out?
Let's see. I mean, there's quite a few. I nearly died on a training accident, skydiving, learning to skydive in the military. Had a multiple entanglement, and
Oh God,
we have
that'd be
something. I don't
terrifying.
know if you've skydived or ever done it, but there's something called an AAD, which is an automatic activation device. It's a small computer. It's based on barometric pressure inside the reserve, and so if you're knocked out or unable to pull your reserve handle, then it'll fire, and that's a terrifying moment. And so I had a reserve fire with an AED in the dark at night, and I was a
Oh
brand
God.
new skydiver, had no damn clue what was going on. The chances of that going well are exceptionally small, like to the
Yeah.
point of I think that that has happened before in similar scenarios, and the other people that it happened to have died. So
Yeah.
for me to have lived through it was incredible. You
Yeah.
know, that was a wild experience. And that was very, very scary.
Yeah, I can't imagine that feeling of free falling through the air, like tangled up, like
There's a lot
that's
of
gotta
choice
be.
words being said.
I can imagine.
As let's see, I had a near drowning, two near drownings. Nothing exceptionally ultra scary in combat. No, I got blown up and knocked out. None of the, like, you know, whiz bang wild stories.
Yeah.
I had a pretty exciting, fun. We got into some shootouts, like we did some stuff, but like, there's a lot of guys that had a lot scarier shit
Oh,
happen to
yeah.
them overseas. I'm lucky. I have all 10 fingers and all 10 toes, you know. I'm not too jacked up. Like, I have kind of the standard everything hurts, you know.
Starts about our age anyway.
Yeah, but you know, it's all the soft tissue damage and all the other stuff that I have.
Yeah.
I'm very lucky.
For sure, man.
You know, and actually, a number of my friends are very lucky too. So.
Yeah. And you guys are very well trained. I think for me, the scariest thing would be dark water and being in underwater in the night. And like,
oh, you would have hated the job I had.
Yeah. What was it?
Yeah. The first SEAL team I was at was SDV, so SEAL Delivery Vehicle.
Okay.
And we drove mini subs. So I have, you know, well north of 1,400 hours of time underwater.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, if you get claustrophobic, you would not like that job.
Yeah, I think it was a Jack Carr novel or something else I was reading. Anyway, yeah, it was like basically the guy was just like having to like basically like box breathe and meditate because he couldn't see anything. He was just freaking out like underwater. Like,
yeah, yeah, I helped him rewrite that section.
Okay, was that from one of his books?
Yes.
Okay, sweet.
That and if you've read the last book, that skydiving piece too.
Red Sky Morning?
Yeah.
I've listened to all of them on audiobook. I got Red Sky Morning because I was doing an interview with him, and then I was like, oh man, this is awesome. I listened to like all of them.
He and I are good friends, so when stuff comes up or he needs advice on things that he can use me for as a reference, I've kind of helped with that, and it's been a pretty cool honor to be able to do that.
That is cool. He's a cool guy. So the guy I was talking about earlier that took me on my first Western hunt, the Swick, he also wasn't my first spear fishing trip, but it was like one of the first. And it was at the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel. Are you familiar with it?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, like, you know, very, yeah, cold, dark water, like pretty hard current, not like, you know, crystal clear blue, like coral reefs and like awesomeness, like diving down, seeing like 1 foot in front of your face and like giant rocks emerging and like sheep's head. And I intentionally did it because I knew it was going to scare the crap out of me, and I like wanted to make myself uncomfortable. But yeah, that's not my game.
Yeah, I'm glad for those experiences because they have definitely informed my left and right limits for what I can deal with, anxiety and fear wise.
Yeah,
I mean, if people from the outside were looking at my list of hobbies and things that I do, they would probably think I was on the edge of unhinged. But usually when they hear me talk, they have an issue kind of putting those two personalities together. They're like, how are these hobbies in this person that speaks like this? Because there's something wrong with you, or you're on Xanax.
So walk me through that. So like getting out and what kind of stuff you're into now. Because I know, like, also I got to ask, do you run your own Instagram page? Because like it's the coolest looking Instagram page I've seen in a long time.
Yep. And I started putting it together that way 4 or 5 months before I went on Joe's show. So it's been like that for a really long time.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah. And that was a function of me not wanting to be beholden to the single square do the thing.
Yeah.
I'm like, fuck it. I'm going to write what I want. I'm going to post every 10 or 12 days and I don't give a shit. Like, you want to check it out? Check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you're listening, go check it out. It's like, he has every line of his feed is like three images connected. That is like it's not even just like always one image. Sometimes it's like a patchwork. It's like, it's cool. You should check it out.
Yeah. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, man.
I mean, that's one way for me to kind of express a little bit of artistic something.
Sure. What else do you do? I know you do a lot of stuff, but like,
yeah. So I started base jumping and skydiving when I was in the military. By the time I left and up to now, I have a little more than 900 base jumps, a few more than 7,000 skydives.
Are you the dude that like jumps off something and then you're running from the cops?
No, I mean, hypothetically, I might have maybe seen lights and sirens a few times, but we'll leave it there. I started base jumping because I wanted to jump off buildings. I thought it was really cool.
It is cool.
And it is really, really cool. I'll tell you what.
What's the coolest thing you jumped off of?
Oh, man.
They're like top two or three.
You know what was really cool is being able to jump off the Eiger.
What is that?
The mountain. So
okay.
The Where Eiger's North Face has a very long history of climbing. And now for many years, people have been jumping off of it because it has like a 3,000 foot sheer face.
Wow.
Or 3,000 foot about flyable face.
That's
I think it's
crazy.
More like 1,500 feet. It's sheer-ish from that area that we jump from. But I've been base jumping for 15 years. I've been skiing for about 15 years. I spend 70 to 85-ish days a year backcountry skiing. Do a little bit of mixed and ice climbing. I hunt quite a bit. I guide, assistant guide in Alaska with Cole Kramer and Paul Shervnek.
Oh, okay.
I've been doing that for almost 6 years now. Let's see. I make bows. I still do art and photography. I base jump quite a bit.
Okay.
So, yeah, I don't know. I just try and live life.
Are you married? Single?
No. Yeah.
Okay. How do you... Okay, here's something that I've been struggling... Not struggling with, but kind of struggling. Not struggling, but dealing with lately. You know, I love what I do to the point where like I'm slightly unbalanced, maybe a little bit addicted, which I don't know if you even know, but I do like six or seven like backcountry, not always backcountry, but always like out of state, Western public land, DIY type hunts a year. And we make a TV show and YouTube channel and all that and podcast too. So, you know, in the fall, I'm going on a trip every month. You know, usually 7 to 10 days, and then I usually do like a winter trip, and then like this spring I'm going to New Zealand, which is going to be awesome. But, and this is like I'm sure a very downscaled version of your life, but like, how do you deal with like just normalcy and like normal life? Because, like,
man, I mean, I kind of don't.
Yeah.
But no, but honestly, like my the two guys that I ski tour with all the time, one of them is a active reservist Green Beret. The people that I go and help at the gym at, they are well known for having trained Hollywood types and professional athletes. I still hang out with a few team guys occasionally. All the base jumpers I jump with and have and know, some of them are world-class level athletes and jumpers. And I guess the way that I deal with normalcy is I don't.
You avoid it?
I don't even just avoid it. It's just not.
Yeah.
I don't have a normal job. Like I work remote for Protect doing this kind of stuff, like spokesmanship stuff and product development and more athlete performance. And I've been very, very lucky to just continue to pick things that put me in that biosphere of people,
yeah,
and activities,
yeah, yeah.
So it's become my thing.
Yeah, no, it can be tough, you know. And there's a balance there. Like, I don't want people to think like, oh, I don't like love my family or something. But after about 2 weeks of waking up and, you know, packing kids' lunches and driving to school, and it's just like, I'm like, I need another trip, man.
Yeah.
You got, I mean, some of that trip.
I take trips all the time. I'm skiing all the time. I'm climbing all the time. I hunt alone quite a bit because,
yeah,
I like the thrill.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. Well, keep living life for the rest of us. No, I'm just kidding. Hey guys, I want to talk to you really quick about one of my favorite partners, which is blackovis.com. And I've been using Black Ovis since way before I had a TV show or a podcast or any of that stuff. They're kind of your one-stop shop for anything you need as far as solid hunting gear. You know, they got camping stuff, they got crispy boots, seek outside shelters, loophole optics, tons of other great brands. And they also have their own in-house brand, which is pretty good stuff. They got some really good merinos and some puffies that I've worn before, and they're at a great price point. So, you know, the other thing I love about Black Ovis is their custom arrow shop. A lot of people don't know this, but you can send in your exact specifications for your specific type of arrow, your length, your fletchings, your inserts, field tips, all that stuff. and Black Ovis will custom make your arrows and send them straight to your door. It's a really cool deal, guys. So go over there to blackovis.com, check out everything they got over there. And when you do, use the promo code QUEST and you will save and you'll help support the show. So go to blackovis.com, use that code QUEST, and get some solid hunting gear.
That's cool, man. So, all right. So, talk to me about hunting. When did you get into hunting, and how did you get there? And I like this guy I was just talking, or that I just met at church. He's a pretty cool dude, but for him, like, he got into hunting after the service, and he says like hunting saved his life. I'm not like saying that about you, but I know that it is something that is many times helpful for folks that have had combat experiences and stuff. So, yeah, just walking through how and when and why you got into hunting and like how you went from that to into like, assistant guiding and stuff, and maybe what's your trajectory there?
Yeah, so I got into hunting through Andy Stumpf. He and I have known each other a long time. Let's see, this would have been about a year after I got out of the military. He had already started bow hunting with John Dudley.
Oh, cool.
And I was poking him. I'm like, yeah, that seems interesting. And I had done a pheasant hunt. I spearfished the entire time I was in the military. So I wasn't averse to or not exposed to killing shit. And then I went on a pheasant hunt in Colorado. We killed pheasant and chucker. I think they were chucker.
Nice.
A ton of them. It was a cleanup hunt for a ranch. So
Okay.
it was me and another team guy. And they're like, yeah, just go for it. God, we must have shot 30 freaking birds. But I was poking Andy, and then somebody dropped out of a bear hunt. And he gave me a call, and he's like, look, man, here's the deal. And it must have been February or March, kind of. February, March, something like that. He said, if you can get yourself to Kansas for a turkey hunt in a month or 2 weeks, it might have been 2 weeks, then John will teach you how to shoot a bow. And you just have to practice for about 5 weeks, and then you'll go on a bear hunt. Like, just here's how much it costs. Can you handle that? Can you get yourself there? Can you do everything? Do you have a passport ready? Whatever. And I was like, fuck yeah, sign me up. I'll get a ticket right now. And I probably bought a ticket to Kansas that afternoon. And it was Andy, Chad Ward was there cooking, John Dudley, Chad Mendez was there
Cool.
hunting. I think it was for a wild turkey event and also this turkey hunt. So I didn't hunt turkey. I just went out and observed, but John was teaching me how to shoot. And then I practiced basically every day up until his bear hunt, and then went on his bear hunt and shot two black bear.
Nice, dude. With a bow.
And
Obviously
with a
with a
bow.
bow. Wow, you just learned that weekend and you shot two bears with a bow.
Yeah, well, 5 weeks later, 6 weeks later.
Oh, okay. You learned at the turkey thing. Right. What kind of style of hunting was it?
Spot and stalk.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, I mean, that's legit.
Yeah, it was a learning experience. But immediately I was like, I absolutely love this. This is fucking cool. And then that fall went to a place in Texas and shot some whitetail. That was fantastic, super cool. With John and Andy again. And then after that, I was just on a freaking roll. I'm like, let's keep finding hunts and shooting shit. And then the reason I ended up on Joe's show was because the next fall, I shot a 54-inch Canadian moose.
Wow.
Yeah, not with a bow, with a rifle.
Okay.
Regardless, it was a big bull.
Yeah.
Which that was an incredible experience. And I just kept going. I just kept going and kept going. And I think the fall after that, I was at John Barklow's 50th birthday. He put me through winter warfare training when I was in the military. So I've
Wow.
known Barklow a long time. And he at his house, we're all drinking tequila. And he's like, you got to meet this guy. He's about your age and you'd fucking love him and you'd get along with him. And it was Cole Kramer. And Cole and I started bullshitting. And that was the year after he and Chris Kamak had shot that world record bear. So his pictures on like Bow Hunter magazine, with Chris, like, oh yeah, look at this bear. And I'm like, that thing's freaking huge. He goes, you should come up and try it with your background. Like, yeah, you should pack and see how you like it. And so I mean, that was in April or so. April, or yeah, I think it was about April up in Montana. And in September, I was on Kodiak packing for him on a goat hunt.
Oh, wow, okay.
And he's like, dude, if you like it, like, I'll teach you how to guide. And what, 5.5 seasons later, like, I'm up with him, just he and I, guiding bear hunts and blacktail hunts. And, you know, I'm what they call like a hobby guide. It's like a joke term that they use in Alaska. It's people who don't live there.
Right.
That come up and do 2, 3, maybe 4 guided hunts a year. But they sort of make the guiding world go around. It's like that's where the rubber meets the road, is they need guides up there to guide people.
For sure.
So that's the kind of person I am. But like, Cole's a professional. He's been doing it 20 years. And he's damn good. His success rate is incredible. He knows bears and he knows goats and he knows deer. And man, we shoot some big ones.
That's awesome.
But it's been incredible. And the last 3 or 4 years, I've really got down the rabbit hole of shooting traditional archery gear, and I've shot quite a few animals with bows as well as trad bows.
Okay. So are you like a fully licensed guide now, or are you still working?
No, I'm a fully licensed assistant guide. Wow. I have been for a number of years, and the next step will be a registered guide.
And so do you have to be a registered guide to like guide people?
Yeah. No, to guide alone in a unit. If you're an assistant guide, you need the registered guide there with you. Now, a lot of these hunts,
like physically with you in person,
physically with you or in the hunt area.
Okay. Yeah.
So for instance, I can go with a guy and we can go hunt blacktail, and then Cole can be, you know, a few miles away with the other guy hunting blacktail.
Yeah. Right. Right.
So we're both guiding separate hunters on the same hunt area, but he could be out there completely alone with not another guide in the area at all.
Yeah. And you're working towards registered guide.
Yeah. And that it's literally just a time thing.
Yeah.
Alaska requires a specific amount of time in the field. Yeah. Same thing with registered guide, with an assistant guide. Like, you need, what is it, like 60 days in the field, and you need recommendations and letters, and then you need to take a test and a board. And like, there's a lot of stuff that goes into becoming a guide and becoming a registered guide and becoming a master guide, becoming an outfitter in Alaska, because they take it really seriously. God, I've heard jokes up there that they take their wildlife management up there more seriously than any other laws. And sometimes it feels like it.
Yeah. I mean, that's a huge part of their economy,
and they've done a good job.
They have. Yeah.
I mean, it appears so. Everybody always has their own opinions, but
yeah, I mean, it was a trip to Alaska that changed my life. Is the reason why I'm sitting here talking to you right now, was because that dude that I keep mentioning, Ned, my buddy, who was a SWIC, just like, hey, you want to go on this like walk-in DIY caribou thing? I think he probably asked like a dozen people and they all said no. And I was like, yeah, sure. And then I realized what I got myself into. And I was like pretty fat at this point, so I had to like lose a bunch of weight and start training. But yeah, I went and did it. And I was like, yep, I'd always hunted, but like backcountry in the mountains, like it's a different game than like trotting out to your tree stand and just sitting there for a couple hours and then going home.
Yeah, man, I've sat in one tree stand and I just about lost my damn mind.
I will say the adrenaline dump when a deer comes out at like 30 yards near a tree stand is like way more intense than Western hunting. But I think that's because in Western hunting, you're pretty far away, and then like your adrenaline is like channeled into the stalk. You know what I mean?
To a degree. And I have felt a change in that since using almost exclusively traditional gear. I mean, I shot a bull Roosevelt elk at 9 yards last season.
Yeah, that's definitely adrenaline.
I shot a cow elk at 3.
Oh my God.
Yards.
You just stabbed it.
Yeah, I could have. I could have poked her. You know, so people are like, oh, yeah, you know, yeah, you're farther away, and you are, until you're not.
Sure.
And I've been within 10 yards of a ton of animals. Because I'm hunting with traditional gear now.
Well, maybe it's just distance. That
distance can really do it.
Because that's how I grew up, was bow hunting in tree stands, because you couldn't shoot rifles where I grew up. So everything was 40 yards, you know, and
which is so cool to hear animals that close.
Yeah. And like, they look up at you and you're like,
you're sure they can hear your heart beating and like looking right through you, you know?
Because you can hear it. Thump, 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 thump. Be quiet. Stop breathing.
That's wild, man. Yeah, I was going to ask you about rifles, but it sounds like you're more of a bow guy.
I'm specifically a bow guy for hunting. I do have a flintlock that I made. So when I get the opportunity, I'll hunt with that. But I don't have interest in shooting. I do some competitions here and there, long range shooting, like NRL Hunter, and I've done some of the 6 hour, like hunter games, and, you know, I'll shoot. Like I still like to shoot. I probably shoot, 3,000 to 5,000 rounds a year or something of, you know, pistol and rifle. So I mean,
your rifle of
staying
choice,
competent, for long range stuff or just for fun.
Yeah. Like bolt gun.
Ooh, a bolt gun. Well, I have one getting made that's going to be a 7mm. So hopefully that is. And in the meantime, I'm still a gas gun guy for fun because...
Yeah,
I just love it. And I have a DS Arms FAL clone. So that thing is fun as shit.
Nice, dude.
Nothing like shooting a whole bunch of 308 in a row.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, so... How'd you get linked up? So I did a podcast with Mark Healy a while ago, and he's
awesome, hungover?
No, he's a cool guy. And, he sent me a bunch of, Protect stuff. I actually really like the Rest stuff. Like that stuff knocks me out, man.
It is magic.
It is. It is. But anyway, how'd you get linked up with those guys?
So actually, Mark Carter, who's one of the athletes and has been around Protect for a very long time, he helped teach me how to snowboard. So I went out snowboarding with him through some stuff up here in the Wasatch. And for that, I was with Cole guiding a Yeti and Stone Glacier hunt for Mountain Goat. And Mark Healy was on the trip.
Okay.
Well, it was pissing rain. It's Kodiak for like 5 days. Yep. So... Mark, myself, and Sam Averett, who's a photographer.
Oh, yeah, I know him.
Yeah. The three of us just worked out and drank and hung out and bullshitted. And I mean, there's nothing else to do on Kodiak when it's raining like that. You know, you can't go in the field. There's nothing else to do. We weren't getting obliterated, but we were having a good time. Like, why not just tie one on and have a good time? Lyle Hebel's there.
Okay.
I know. And we got to know each other pretty well. So when Protect got to the place where they were starting to make actual product, which was about that first year, they sent me a ton of it. And I've been using their stuff for 4.5 years or so.
Cool.
And then last year, almost 2 years ago, I split ways with Black Rifle Coffee. I was there for years doing photography and marketing and product development and design work. And I called Tim Duba, who I've known for a while. He's one of the founders. And I was like, Tim, so I'm out of work. I think there's a position at Protect. We had talked about maybe me doing that anyways. I had said I wanted to kind of move into a something that still felt like a startup because Black Rifle had grown so much.
Yeah.
I was kind of over the corporate environment anyways. And it just happened way faster than I would have expected. So I called Tim and he's like, dude, you got a spot. We'll figure it out. Like,
nice.
So really that's a huge thank you to Tim and the team at Protect for giving me the opportunity to try.
Yeah. And what do you do over there exactly?
I do product development.
Okay.
I help with marketing direction. They use my Rolodex and honestly, it's a good thing. And then I do stuff like this. Like I talk about the product and the brand and the people, and I really, really believe in it. And I'm a relatively high performing hobby athlete. And so I think what I'm saying makes sense to people because I'm not a professional athlete where they're like, that's not attainable. I'm a guy that they can look at and be like, oh, he's got aches and pains and he's almost 37 and he trains every day and that's doable.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm not rich as shit. I'm not independently wealthy. I'm not all these other things that sometimes people will allow guys to assume isn't going on.
Yeah,
but I know there's a lot of people in the outdoor space that are really well off or don't pay for anything. And that's fine. but I'm not that guy. Like I've eaten tag soup and paid for a bunch of hunts.
Of course.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool, man.
But that's what I do there. And then I'll be heading product development next year.
So like figuring out which products you want to try to go after and like just
Reformulating some of our formulas to make them even better tasting, more efficient on the uptake. We're going to have some new flavors. We're going to reformulate and try and make the BCAAs, the Clarity and the Dropper better. We're sticking with our group of products and making them even better for a lower price point because now we have our own production facility in Texas.
Oh, nice.
We're 100% vertical. We make everything in the U.S. Everything is U.S., U.S., U.S. So
nice.
If people are looking for something like that, that's clean and sugar-free and you want to be U.S. only, give us a rip.
Yep. Cool, man. Man, there's two. Okay. I wanted to ask you, I know we're coming up on time here, but you mentioned Texas. What do you think about what's going down on the border down there? Like,
well, I think it's a mess. And I think that the border running from the Gulf all the way to the Pacific is a mess, you know? And
yeah.
It's been a bit of a sieve. And
it seems like intentional to me, like they're up to something.
I'm not sure if it's purely intentional or if we're, man, it's like that saying, it's like never attribute to malfeasance what is easily attributable to negligence.
True.
I think there's a whole lot of negligence going on the part of a ton of bureaucratic agencies. And I also think that Border Patrol is just woefully understaffed and for undersupported. Sure. I know guys that are on BORTAC teams and they're like, dude, we are so assed out all the time. And like, it's not their fault.
Yeah.
Also not the fault of the, you know, the state troopers that are trying to pull people up. Like, what are you supposed to do when, you know, say there's, call it 100 troopers in an area and there's 10,000 people coming through. Like, man, yeah. Good luck.
Yeah.
Seriously. They only have so many helicopters.
Right.
You know, so if they're not getting full support from whomever it is, you know, whether it's Trump, Biden, Obama, whoever, we just have not been good about that specific border. And then on the other side of the border, on the southern end, like they have the full support of the cartels.
Yeah.
So we're basically fighting a war against an organized army with sticks and stones. So it's going to be an uphill battle until we can fix what's going on and still maintain a level of compassion for the people that are coming over, because I think there's a ton of people that are coming over for the wrong reasons and are either crooked, criminal, or both.
Yeah.
But I also know that there are women and children that are getting trafficked.
For sure.
And you know, guys that might be in our position that are from Guatemala and have no jobs and they heard that it's greener grass on the other side and they're just trying to live a life. Like,
yeah.
Dude, those people are there. And to categorize them all as one or the other is, I think, poor form, and it's unnecessary. Sure. We need to have compassion. And then we also need to carry a huge stick with the people that don't deserve it.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, man. I mean, my wife is a refugee, but I mean, she waited in a country for 8 years for the UN to place her here.
Yeah.
So like I, you know, and America's built on refugees and stowaways and, you know,
I'm sitting here.
Exactly. I'm sure there's something like that in my history too. So, I mean, yeah, we definitely need to have compassion, like you said, but, something's got to change, 'cause there's a lot of people getting through that are scary. I feel
should
like
not be here. I mean, no. We're talking like full blown terrorists that are coming through.
Or like, I mean, you got to think like the Chinese and the Russians and whoever else see this and like, what they're like, wow, we can just sneak a shitload of people in there.
And why not?
No.
I mean, if you're thinking about it from, everybody thinks that they would be the good guy, right? So they always put themselves in that sort of mental space. Well, you know, put yourself in Russia's space.
Yeah.
You know, put yourself in China's brain. Yeah. They'd go for it. You would too. If you had the opportunity and you saw that there was a country that was just like, oh, well, I guess this is just happening. Oh, well. Yeah, you'd probably let her rip too.
Scary, dude.
It is. And it's a shame to see, but hopefully there's change coming. And I think regardless of who got elected, there was going to be change coming anyways, because Border Patrol is completely fed up.
Yeah.
And they've been yapping about it for a while. So I think that change was coming regardless of who got put into office. Yeah. It wasn't going to matter. Like Border Patrol is angry. And,
well, hopefully the change will come better and quicker. Maybe
let's hope. And let's hope. You know, we will find out at the end of January.
For sure, man. All right. Well, dude, I've really enjoyed chatting with you. You got any adventures coming up in the short term you're looking forward to?
Let's see. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be an adventure. I'm going to be in Hawaii with Healy over New Year's. So that'll be an adventure. Going skiing in Japan at the end of January.
Nice.
And man, like, didn't bring it up earlier, but like hunting my last mule deer buck was an adventure up here.
Where was it?
Up kind of above my house, like 25, 30 minutes away in the Wasatch. I ended up shooting the biggest buck I've ever put hands on, and it took me 8 days to chase him on public land, and it was with a longbow. So I was kind of lost.
And that's
my mind
a heavily pressured area.
Yeah. To put it lightly, I think success rate's like in the single digits.
Yeah. Wow, right, man.
But he was big.
Have you posted him yet on Instagram?
I put a story up. That's about it.
Okay.
Because it was just for me. I shot him in October.
Okay.
So I shot him and I was like, that was really cool. And I called a couple buddies that I knew would appreciate it. I will.
Okay.
He scored 173.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome, and dude.
It took like a 44-yard shot with the longbow.
That's a tough shot with a longbow.
It was a poke. Believe me, I was like, please let this work out. And then the thing was broadside. He put his onside leg in front of him, and then he looked at a doe that was out in front of him. I was like, oh, he's going to let me do it.
That's amazing. Okay. That's amazing. I got my best muley to this point as well this year in Colorado. One of my favorite hunts of all time. Super quick, but yeah, man, I just decided this year, like, I like mule deer. If someone said you can only hunt one thing the rest of your life, it would hands down be mule deer. And like, I would probably take like a really good mule deer, like rut hunt, over like any hunt in the world, like sheep, goat, Tajikistan or whatever. Like, if someone's like, you can have this or this badass like mule deer hunt in the rut, I'm going mule deer.
Oof, man. I don't know about rut, but I'm at this point, like, I'm agreeing with you on mule deer, because I've killed them now in velvet and hardhorn, never in the rut. I've chased them in the rut, but it's kind of fun to hunt them in the slack season. Like, once they just get hardhorn and they're not quite like chasing does around, you know, it's still like bachelor groups of bucks. Like, and that's how I was hunting him.
He happened
to be with a doe and another smaller forkhorn, but he wasn't chasing her. They're just kind of hanging out. And it's cool because they're still a little like high alerty, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mule deer are awesome. So I'm going to hunt, Lord willing, I'm hunting Utah for the first time ever this fall. I'm doing the muzzleloader thing.
Oh, cool.
Like late September.
That should be fun.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to that. I'm already looking forward to that.
Let me know when you come on out. I'll help glass if I'm around.
Oh, that'd be awesome, man.
Yeah. I tell people when they come, I'm like, look, this place is cool. Like, just give me a holler. I like being outside.
Absolutely, dude. I will definitely take you up on that. It'd be cool to have you maybe in on the episode a little bit too.
Yeah.
Are you going to be at Expo or SHOT Show by any chance?
I might be. I should be at Western Hunter.
Okay, cool. I'll be there.
I'm not sure if I'll be at SHOT. I haven't really decided, and I'm not really sure of my timing coming back from Hawaii. And then I have like only about a week and a half until then I go to Japan. So
sweet.
We'll see.
Well, I got your number, so I'll hit you up when I'm out there. And
perfect.
Definitely hit you up. Maybe we can link up, like I said, this fall. That'd be cool.
Yeah, I'd appreciate it.
All right, dude. Where can people find you if they want to learn more about what you got going on?
Dude, they can watch me on the Instagram. It's trevor.p.thompson, and that's it. Don't expect a whole lot all the time, but if you're checking my stories, you'll see a ton of working out. the occasional Muppet meme, and that's about it.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks for your time, dude. It's been fun chatting with you.
I appreciate the talk. Thank you.
All right, man. See ya.